Every single day, you have executives signing off on these multi-million dollar custom-built AI models, and they're completely unaware that they are throwing their budget into a strategic category literally called where money goes to die.
Right. Yeah. They just think complexity equals value.
Exactly. And today, we are going to look at why the smartest move you can make in AI right now might actually be, well, the most boring one.
It's a massive blind spot for leadership, honestly. I mean, people feel this immense pressure to be innovative, so they just skip the foundational steps and sprint straight toward the most expensive, convoluted solution possible.
Which is exactly why we're digging into Rick Becker's April 2026 white paper and presentation, The AI Playbook, From Buzzword to Business Strategy.
Yeah, it's a great piece of work.
It really is. And if you are listening to this right now and feeling completely exhausted by the relentless fire hose of jargon, LLMs, agents, context windows, neural networks, this deep dive is for you. Our mission is to cut through all that noise and figure out the actual mechanics of adopting and governing this technology. No hype, just strategy. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it. And I think strategy requires context.
Right.
Because the narrative out there is that this technology just materialized out of thin air in late 2022.
Right.
And I mean, it didn't.
No, the timeline in the playbook is completely counter to that whole overnight success myth. If we compress the history, we're really looking at a 70-year compounding curve, basically. I mean, we had Alan Turing asking if machines could think back in the 1950s, then Eliza, the first basic chatbot in the
Right,
60s.
and then the massive hype and subsequent bust of the AI winter in the 80s.
Yes, and then the shift toward machine learning that let IBM's Deep Blue beat Garry Kasparov in the 90s.
That shift from programming explicit rules to letting systems learn from data is really the bedrock. And that evolved into the deep learning era of the 2010s, Siri, Watson, AlphaGo. But you can't talk about today's landscape without looking at the specific catalyst that completely fractured the trajectory we were on.
Okay, right, because Becker points to a single 2017 Google paper called Attention is All You Need. So why did one research paper suddenly accelerate everything?
It fundamentally altered the architecture of how machines process language. I mean, before 2017, AI models digested text sequentially.
Oh, sequentially, like one at a time.
Exactly. They'd read one word, process it, hold it in memory, and then look at the next word. It was computationally agonizing and terrible at maintaining long-term context.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So that paper introduced the transformer architecture, specifically a mechanism called self-attention.
It sounds like before 2017, an AI was trying to read a novel by looking through a tiny peephole, shifting it one word at a time.
That's a great way to put it.
And by the end of a paragraph, it forgot what the first sentence was. So the transformer basically ripped the door off the hinges so the AI could see the entire room at once.
That is a brilliant way to visualize the mechanism, honestly, because the self-attention mechanism calculates the mathematical weight and relationship of every single word in a passage simultaneously.
Wow.
Right? Regardless of where those words are positioned, that is how it suddenly understood nuance, sarcasm, and, complex context.
It's all at once.
Exactly. That architectural shift is the engine behind GPT, Claude, Gemini, Llama, all of them.
But a blueprint isn't a building, right? You still need raw materials to actually construct the thing.
Oh, absolutely. You need massive amounts of compute and data,
Yeah.
specifically GPUs, graphics processing units.
Like for video games.
Exactly. They were originally designed for rendering video game environments because, well, rendering light and shadow requires processing thousands of calculations at the exact same time.
Ah, parallel processing.
You got it. It turned out that parallel processing was exactly what neural networks needed to train on the entirety of the public internet.
That's wild. But even with the engine and the fuel, it was still locked in a garage for a few years, right? I mean, developers had access to APIs, but it didn't cross over into the mainstream until the interface actually changed.
Right. Accessibility was the final enabler. When OpenAI put a simple blank text box in front of that massive engine, it just removed the barrier to entry entirely.
You didn't need to know Python to interact with a supercomputer anymore.
Exactly.
So now that we have this accessible supercomputer, we have to deal with the terminology problem because people use AI as a catch-all for everything from like a simple spam filter to a model writing code.
Oh, all the time.
And Becker breaks this down to separate the science fiction from the business reality, which I think is so helpful.
Yeah, he frames it visually as a set of Russian nesting dolls, which makes it super easy to grasp.
I love that analogy.
Right. So artificial intelligence is just the largest, outermost doll. That's any machine mimicking human cognition. You open that up, and inside is machine learning, where systems learn from data instead of rules.
Yeah.
And inside that is deep learning, which uses layered neural networks for things like computer vision or natural language processing.
And then the innermost doll, the one everyone is obsessed with right now, is generative AI.
Exactly.
Models that don't just categorize data, but create net new text, audio, or code.
Yeah.
And the currency of that generation is tokens, right? People constantly throw around terms like 128K context window.
Yes.
And a token is just a fragment of a word. So the context window is essentially how much immediate working memory the AI has for a specific task.
Right. That's the mechanical limitation.
Yeah.
But there is a functional limitation we really need to draw a hard line on. Everything we have today is narrow AI.
Narrow AI.
Yeah. It is exceptionally good at specific domain-bound tasks. It is not artificial general intelligence or AGI, which is that theoretical human-level reasoning across all domains.
I'm really glad we're drawing that line because there is an evolution happening right now that kind of bridges the gap, and it's causing a ton of confusion. Agentic AI.
Oh, man. This is where the paradigm completely shifts. Well, generative AI is reactive. Mm-hmm. You prompt it, it generates text, it stops. Agentic AI is proactive and autonomous.
Okay.
It doesn't just write an email. It writes the email, sends it, monitors the inbox for a reply, parses that reply, and then interacts with your calendar software to book a follow-up meeting.
Wow.
Right. It has access to tools and acts independently based on a broader goal.
Okay, hold on. I have to challenge that a bit. If agentic AI is taking action autonomously, who is on the hook when it inevitably messes up?
That's the million-dollar question.
I mean, if an agentic AI sends a hallucinated pricing contract to a vendor who gets fired, the AI or the employee who initially prompted it. Because if we only have narrow AI, we shouldn't expect this thing to have the judgment of a senior executive.
Oh, you absolutely shouldn't. And you've just hit on the exact reason why governance has to be established before adoption.
Okay.
The employee's always accountable. Always. Agentic AI is incredibly powerful, but it requires heavily defined boundaries.
Right.
You don't give an intern unrestricted access to wire company funds.
Right. Hopefully not.
And you don't give an AI agent unrestricted access to core databases without a human-in-the-loop approval step.
Hmm.
Clarifying that agentic AI operates within strict lanes prevents leaders from dangerously overestimating what it can handle completely unsupervised.
That makes a lot of sense. Because it can act autonomously within those lanes, we can't just treat it like another standard software application.
Not at all.
Which brings us to the actual ROI. How do we take these definitions and apply them to the business today?
Well, Becker argues that you don't actually need enterprise permission to start finding value. He strongly advocates for personal and professional quick wins just to build intuition.
Like the 24/7 brainstorming partner. Oh, yeah. I love that one.
Yes.
I just love the idea of feeding an AI a project proposal and telling it to relentlessly poke holes in the strategy. It's like having a hypercritical colleague available at 2 a.m. who never gets offended.
Exactly. It's brilliant. And when you scale that capability across an entire organization, Becker outlines several enterprise value categories.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of companies immediately gravitate toward the really flashy stuff, like advanced customer experience chatbots or super complex process automation workflows.
Yeah, the stuff that looks good on a presentation slide.
Exactly. But then leaders freeze because they don't know where the actual return on investment is.
And that's where Becker's 2x2 ROI framework comes in. And honestly, this completely changed my perspective on the whole thing.
It's so practical. It's an impact versus effort matrix. And it basically answers the fundamental question of prioritization.
Right.
In the top left quadrant, high impact, low effort, you find the initiatives where you absolutely must start.
And the clearest example he gives for that start here quadrant is knowledge management, which is fascinating to me because it doesn't sound sexy at all. It's literally just digging through old company data.
It isn't sexy. But the mechanism behind it is completely transformative.
How so?
Think about how much institutional knowledge is trapped in clunky internal wikis or buried in email chains or isolated in PDF reports. Traditional keyword search on a company intranet is notoriously terrible.
Oh, it's the worst. You never find what you need.
Exactly. But AI acts as a semantic search engine. It understands the intent behind an employee's question. It synthesizes answers from a dozen disparate company documents and provides a summarized answer with citations.
That's huge. High visibility, massive time savings.
And you're using existing off-the-shelf tools to do it.
Which builds the political capital and the momentum you need to try the top right quadrant, right? The strategic bets. High impact, high effort.
Yeah, this is the complex process automation stuff.
But you only move there after you've mastered the basics.
Precisely. The real trap, however, is the bottom right quadrant. Low impact, high effort.
Oh boy.
Becker explicitly calls this reconsider, or as you mentioned earlier, where money goes to die.
This is the executive ego trap. Why are companies so obsessed with building their own custom proprietary AI models from scratch? It seems crazy.
It is crazy, but it stems from the false assumption that to get a competitive advantage, you absolutely must own the underlying intelligence. Leaders want to be able to say, we have our own AI.
Right, for the press release.
Basically. But training a foundation model costs tens of millions of dollars. It requires specialized engineering talent that is nearly impossible to hire.
Yeah.
And by the time you finish building it, the off-the-shelf frontier models from OpenAI or Anthropic are already two generations ahead of you.
Wow. So unless your entire core business model is selling AI, building a custom model is just a massive misallocation of resources.
Exactly.
Okay, so we know we should leverage the existing frontier models to unlock internal knowledge, but doing that introduces a terrifying vulnerability, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
If you want the ROI, you have to survive the risks.
Let's talk about the dark side of this playbook.
We have to. There are severe risks, and pretending they don't exist is basically corporate negligence at this point. Let's look at hallucinations, for instance.
Oh, yeah. This is a big one.
Because an AI model does not have a database of facts. It is essentially a hyper-advanced autocomplete.
Right. It's just guessing the next word. Exactly. It predicts the most mathematically probable next token. Now, usually, that aligns with the truth. But occasionally, it will confidently invent statistics, fabricate legal precedents, or cite research papers that simply do not exist.
So you can never fully remove human verification from the workflow?
Never.
But what about when a model is working perfectly and then suddenly it isn't?
You're referring to model drift.
Yes, model drift.
Think of it this way. Imagine you hire a brilliant data analyst and they give you flawless reports for 3 months.
Yeah.
Then, over the weekend, without telling you, they completely change their entire analytical methodology.
Oh, that would be terrible.
Right. On Monday, the exact same request yields a totally formatted, unreadable mess.
That is infuriating.
And it is a reality of relying on cloud-based models. The providers are constantly updating the underlying weights to optimize compute costs or to tweak safety guardrails.
Okay.
But those invisible updates can inadvertently degrade performance on the niche edge cases your specific business processes rely on.
That makes a lot of sense. But I'd argue there's a risk even more foundational than model drift. And it's the one keeping chief information security officers awake at night right now. Shadow AI.
Oh, man. It is a massive vulnerability.
I mean, if an employee wants to summarize a dense 50-page unreleased Q3 financials report, and the company hasn't provided a secure AI tool, that employee is just going to find a free public AI tool on their personal phone.
Absolutely, they will.
They copy and paste the confidential financials into the prompt box, and they aren't trying to be malicious. They are just taking a shortcut.
Right, they just want to leave work on time.
Exactly. But by doing that, they are essentially donating your company's deepest secrets to the public library.
Yep. That data is now ingested by the provider and could potentially be used as training data for future public models.
Terrifying.
And the standard corporate reaction to this is to just panic and ban AI entirely. Mm. You know, block the IP addresses.
But bans never work. Employees always find workarounds.
Always. Which is why Becker points to the NIST framework, the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Right.
They built a governance framework based on four pillars: map, measure, manage, and govern. And the absolute first step is map. You cannot govern what you cannot see.
You have to audit your organization to find out where shadow AI is already happening.
Exactly.
And once you map it, you have to actually manage the data flow. This is where Becker's breakdown of enterprise data strategies really clicked for me. He outlines four different ways to architect your data security.
Right. So the first approach is using an API with enterprise terms.
Okay. What does that look like?
Well, you are still using the incredibly powerful public frontier models, but you have a commercial contract that explicitly includes a strict no training clause. The provider guarantees that your prompt data is immediately discarded and not absorbed into their training pipeline.
But some heavily regulated industries don't even trust that, right? So they look at the second option, private or self-hosted model.
Exactly. This involves taking an open-weight model like Meta's Llama or maybe Mistral and running it entirely on your own internal air gap servers.
So your data never touches the outside world.
Right. But the trade-off is that it is computationally expensive to host, and these models typically trail the cutting edge by a few months.
Got it. Then there's the third option, cloud-hosted AI, like AWS Bedrock or Microsoft Azure. You get the frontier models, but they are sandboxed entirely within your existing secure cloud infrastructure.
Yep, that's a very popular middle ground. But the most sophisticated strategy, the one that solves the shadow AI problem without bankrupting the IT department, is the hybrid approach.
Yes. I look at the hybrid approach like an automatic sorting hat for your company's data.
That's a perfect analogy.
You build a gateway layer with data loss prevention or DLP controls. So if a junior developer asks the AI a generic question about fixing Python code, the sorting hat routes that prompt to a cheap, fast, cloud-based API.
Right, because it's not sensitive.
Exactly. But the second the DLP gateway detects a string of numbers that looks like a social security number, or detects the phrase, unreleased Q3 financials.
It intercepts the prompt.
It slams the gate shut on the public cloud and automatically reroutes that query to your highly secure, expensive private server.
And the beauty of it is that it removes the friction. The employee doesn't have to make complex tier-level security judgment calls every single time they write a prompt. The architecture just enforces the governance automatically.
It's brilliant. And that infrastructure is what enables you to finally move into actual implementation. Because rolling this out across a company requires a massive behavioral shift.
A huge shift.
To manage that shift, Becker maps the adoption process directly to the Prashay ADKAR Change Management Framework. ADKAR stands for Awareness, Desire, Knowledge, Ability, and Reinforcement. And he groups those into three phases: crawl, walk, and run.
Right. So the crawl phase focuses on awareness, desire, and knowledge. Yes. This is your foundation. And the golden rule here is governance comes first. Before a single employee is granted access to an enterprise AI tool, the usage policies and data strategies must be locked in.
So you do not skip straight to buying software licenses.
Please don't. You build the guardrails, and then you focus on enterprise-wide literacy.
And once people understand the tool, you move to the walk phase. This is ability. We aren't just letting people experiment with drafting emails anymore. We are taking AI and pointing it directly at specific, measurable business problems.
Exactly. If an AI initiative cannot be directly mapped to a corporate strategic goal, it just gets defunded.
Yeah.
This is also the phase where you build out those robust data pipelines to feed the models.
Which it perfectly sets the stage for the final phase, run. The focus here is reinforcement. And this requires a total rewiring of how managers think.
It really does.
Because in the run phase, you are no longer treating AI as a software application. You are managing AI agents exactly like human team members. Wait, hold on. This is where the playbook gets really wild to me. Are we actually talking about doing quarterly performance reviews for lines of code? If an AI agent underperforms, do we sit it down and put it on a performance improvement plan?
I mean, functionally, yes.
That is crazy.
Think about the mechanism. If you have an agentic AI tasked with processing vendor invoices, you don't just turn it on and walk away. You set smart goals for it. Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound.
Right.
You evaluate its hallucination rates, its task completion speed, its API call efficiency.
So you really do review its performance metrics on a regular cadence, just like an employee.
Exactly. Where is it falling short? Do we need to adjust its system prompt? Do we need to feed it better training data? You course correct it.
Wow.
Or if it's exceeding expectations and operating flawlessly, you promote it, meaning you expand its autonomy and its scope of access. You do not need to invent a bizarre, futuristic management framework for AI. Applying rigorous standard business discipline to these agents is how you stay ahead of the 90% of organizations that are just, you know, winging it.
But there is a ceiling to that autonomy, right?
Right.
Becker emphasizes maintaining a consultative posture. The AI analyzes, the AI advises, but the human decides. We never fully abdicate the final authority.
Absolutely. The run phase is not a destination where you can just put your feet up. It is a continuous iterative cycle of evaluation as the underlying frontier models get more and more sophisticated.
So let's look at the big picture here. We've traced the timeline from Turing to the transformer architecture. We understand that AI isn't magic. It's just math, compute power, and data. By learning the nesting doll vocabulary, mapping out those high-impact, low-effort, quick wins like knowledge management, building hybrid data gateways to prevent your secrets from leaking, and adopting a crawl-walk-run approach, you take this overwhelming fire hose of hype and turn it into a highly structured business capability.
It demands intentionality. You have to define the guardrails before you hit the gas pedal. But As Becker points out, the only truly fatal mistake a company can make right now is paralysis.
Yeah.
Doing nothing is simply not a safe strategy.
I completely agree. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. We just talk extensively about the run phase managing agentic AI systems with the SMART goals, tracking their metrics, and giving them performance reviews.
Yeah.
But as these models become increasingly autonomous and capable of sophisticated logic, what happens when an AI agent inevitably gets tasked with running the performance reviews of other AI agents?
Oh, man. Now that is a structural shift worth preparing for.
Right. If the tools are continuously optimizing themselves, how long until the human's role shifts entirely away from managing the day-to-day work of the AI to simply auditing an entirely AI-run management structure?
It's coming faster than we think.
It's definitely something to think about the next time you casually ask a model to summarize a PDF for you. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Rick Becker's AI playbook.
It was a great discussion.
Your homework for today is simple. Take one of the personal use cases we talked about, whether it's the 24/7 brainstorm partner or explaining a complex topic like your five, and go test it out. Build that intuition. We'll see you next time.